What I like best is that we were able to spare the public of the draconian fare increases, fare and toll increases, and service cuts, which just, you know, as we use the word draconian, it was apt. It was not an overstatement.
Bailing out after getting bailed out, MTA Chief Lee Sander. It's sad, really, that Governor Patterson and maybe some Albany legislators wanted Lee Sander out. Unlike some of his predecessors who ran the MTA, Sander got the job not just as a political favor, but because he was a real mass transit advocate and expert. So let's find out why he was forced out just after successfully lobbying for the new state deal to avoid the worst-case fare hikes and service cuts, and even getting 2 years of capital improvement money to boot. With me for this, Westchester Assemblyman Democrat Richard Brodsky and Daily News transit reporter Pete Donahue. Welcome back to both of you. Assemblyman Brodsky, were you among those who thought Lee Sander should resign?
No, I wasn't. And I don't think there was a huge constituency for Lee's resignation from the legislature. Lee came in with as a transit professional, as you point out, and did some things that were, I think, quite important. Labor peace is backed, and that really is in everyone's interest. The MTA was, in some sense, reprofessionalized. And I'm purely speculating here, Brian, but there is, when we remerge the job of chairman and CEO, as we did in this statute, and without getting too technical, that means that now the head of the day-to-day operations of the MTA will also be a member of the board. There's always been a different profile for that. And with this other change in law we did, which is that there's now a fiduciary duty, and I can explain that legal term, for board members, I think there's some sense that the things that are needed might be a little bit different than the things Lee was so good at. That's speculation on my part. I think Lee did a good job in putting the MTA back on its feet. He was a Spitzer appointee, and there were, I think, some residual issues in the Patterson administration about that. But I don't think this is a rejection of what the accomplishments Lee made during his tenure.
Now, Pete Donahue, transit reporter for the Daily News. Before we just accept that the legislature had nothing to do with this, we were at least speculating in our office this morning that maybe this was part of the deal to get the Senate to vote for the MTA bailout. Listen to this clip from a couple of days ago of the Senate Majority Leader Malcolm Smith talking about the MTA.
This clearly was a difficult process, and difficult not because of members and their input, but difficult because we have an authority that needs to change its paradigm on how it is managed.
So there was implicit, inherent criticism of how the MTA is managed, even as Malcolm Smith was announcing that his house was finally going to get on board. Do you think there's anything here?
Well, I think bottom line, it's just pure politics. I think Lee Sander was widely respected as an expert in his field, and while there were a few public relations blunders over the last couple of years, I think this is, as soon as Patterson took over, I was waiting for the day when this would happen. I thought it would happen initially when the new governor took office.
Why? He hasn't made heads roll with respect to, you know, a whole bunch of other Spitzer commissioners or anything like that, has he?
Well, I mean, I think there's been a fair amount of changeover. What the point I was getting to is, I think that, you know, the MTA is a big punching bag, and they've been punching it up with increasing ferocity the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty clear. I think what Patterson wants to do is make more of an image of change, that they're really turning the MTA upside down. I think that's what it is more than anything, because if you're going on how the place has been managed in the last couple of years, I don't think you can make a strong case that Lee Sander
right.
had to go.
But as far as you know, there were no state Senate politics. We're going to vote for this only if Lee Sander's head rolls because some of our members insist upon it.
Brian, if I can jump in there.
Assemblyman.
If you you listen to what Malcolm said, he said that the paradigm has to change.
Right.
I really don't think there was a lot of personal animosity to Lee. I really just don't think that.
So it was just Patterson? He wasn't so tight with Patterson?
I don't think you should personalize it, because if you listen to what Malcolm said, the MTA is an organization that runs a pretty good system, but it has completely lost public confidence. This fight about the easy pass that the board members entered into earlier this year, where all you read about was board members incensed that there was a move to remove their free easy passes. This, the notion of the seven line, where they took over a project they never should have taken over, and it's going to cost the MTA money. People became more and more concerned that the paradigm, the model of governance at the MTA, was not the right model. And in that case, if you want to go back to the models that worked, they're the models that worked when you had Dick Ravitch as chair, and even to an extent Peter Calico. And in both those cases, you had strong, independent chairman who, frankly, didn't need the job and exercised an independence that really made the authority stand up to governors and mayors. In this case, if you look at the changes we actually made, which is the merging of the board chairmanship and the CEO function, and this, the imposition of this fiduciary duty on the board, I think it's fair to say that this is about changing the whole way the MTA functions.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I think there was very strong legislative interest.
And there seemed to be resistance on the part of Sander. He was on the show this week right after the agreement was announced, and I asked him about the part of the deal that will require new kinds of audits of the MTA. And listen to his response.
We've always said we have no problem with audits. We didn't like them being called forensic because I don't believe anybody, you know, has been engaged in any kind of criminality. I mean, that we found actually, quite frankly, offensive. But we've always said anybody can come at any time and look at what we're doing, and we have a lot of folks doing that anyway.
So he at least found offensive the framing of the language forensic audits as part of this deal.
I think one of the things what he was reacting to there is there was a lot of talk, particularly in the Senate, about transparency and the need for reform and transparency. And you look at the measures that they enacted, and really they are quite a joke. I mean, a lot of this stuff is just duplicative of what already exists.
You're telling me that the fiduciary duty is a joke?
We talked about this yesterday, about these transparency issues, and we were on agreement on our private phone call, so I don't know what you're objecting to here.
On the transparency issues, Pete, they're not a big deal. But the fundamental, we changed the way the MTA functions when we imposed the fiduciary duty on board members.
Look, if we have this conversation 2 years from now, and the MTA acts in such a dramatically different way where they're not marching in step with the governor and or the mayor, then I'll be very surprised.
And look, I don't mind skepticism, but I don't think we should let this whole discussion about what the legislature and the governor did tip over into cynicism.
I don't think we should overblow it either.
Fair enough. But we decided that the model of governance that the MTA was working under was not the right model. We needed a chairman and a CEO who were on the same page, and we needed to make sure that board members were not dancing around about their own interests or doing what they were told and saluting and saying yes, sir, when the real need was to stand up to governors, mayors, and legislators and say, no, that's not the way we're going to do it. That change was made. It may not turn out to be the only change we need to make, and it certainly may need to be refined, but it was a fundamental reform effort that went beyond transparency. All transparency does is tells you what's going wrong. We wanted to change the governance so that things didn't go wrong as often.
So he got asked to leave partly because he was agreeing with Patterson too much?
I think there has been a history at the MTA of governors and mayors thinking that the decisions about what's good for mass transit are made by the staff to the governor and the mayor. Mayor Bloomberg has said, for example, that he expects his appointees to the MTA board to vote as he tells them to vote. Now, that is not either legal, frankly, desirable, and it is a factor in why the MTA has not only failed in certain large policy areas, but it's one of the reasons it gets such a terrible, terrible press.
We're talking about the resignation of Lee Sander as head of the MTA with Westchester Assemblyman Richard Brodsky and Daily News transit reporter Pete Donahue. Pete, did Sander pay a price here for not being tough enough on the transit workers' union Former Parks Commissioner and Citizens Union President Henry Stern wrote on his blog yesterday, bailouts of other companies have been accompanied by substantial staff reductions, but the MTA appears immune to pruning. We cannot micromanage to tell where the fat is hidden, but it is hard to conjure an agency in which each and every one of the almost 70,000 employees is essential to its mission. Is that a strong strain of criticism of Lee Sander? I know he went out of his way to have better relations with the union after the 2005 strike.
Well, he did improve relations with the union, and, you know, if you've noticed, there no longer is the daily or every other day press conference with TWU officials blasting the MTA and its leadership. So, I mean, that definitely was an achievement. I think the MTA has been trimming some of its staff, and they have been doing some reorganization that maybe isn't so apparent from the outside. But I don't think his failure, if that's correct, criticism. I don't think his failure to crack down on the transit workers would have led to his downfall. I mean, I think if anything, I think there was probably a push from the governor's office to treat the TWU more kinder, in a kinder fashion.
And he himself, Sander, did release a press release with a list of what he considers his public accomplishments in his just couple of years as head of the MTA. He says each of the agencies is performing at peak levels. The relationship with the employees is dramatically improved. The integration of the three bus companies took place, the merging of back office functions across seven agencies, the introduction of line general managers on the subway lines will save millions and improve performance. New innovations like rider report cards, text message alerts, and select bus service has improved customer service. I mean, that's his own telling of his legacy, but Assemblyman Brodsky, that's not bad if you buy
it's
his
not.
Framing.
Not, but if you note them, they are essentially changes in what I'll call day-to-day operations. And I think, as I've said repeatedly, Lee's done a very good job on those levels. What the crisis of the MTA over the last 6 months has been a crisis of policy and a crisis of sort of institutional vision. How did we get into a situation where the MTA's capital plan and operating plan went belly up at the same time? Well, part of that goes back to a fight that, frankly, Brian, I think I was on the show about 2 years ago, when the MTA started raising fares without asking for more state aid. And I believe they did that at the instructions of Governor Spitzer. And my public position then, and I think people may recall this, is you don't raise fares until you ask the legislature and the city to increase public funding so that the fare structures are kept to the absolute minimum and a capital plan is funded. There were major disagreements with Lee and the board about that between the Senate and the Assembly particularly, while the governor was insisting that his budget priorities not be interfered with by an MTA demand for money. Those are the issues that I think Lee was subject to some criticism on. All the things he lists as his accomplishment, he deserves absolute credit for.
And it's interesting that you raise that. And before you go, we're going to have the Westchester County Executive, Andy Spano, on later in the program, complaining about the part of the bailout deal that raised payroll taxes for employers in the area to help the MTA in exchange for more aid to suburban school districts. Do you support that aspect? Do you think that's a good deal for Westchester?
It's not just suburban school district, Ryan. Every school district in New York, including New York City, was relieved of the additional financial obligation of helping to pay a payroll tax on its employees that would go to the MTA. So if it's regional, that's just factually wrong. The tax package was very unpleasant. There was, you know, no good way to do this given the nature of the need. Dick Ravitch had pointed out that the cost of the MTA program should not be paid for just by the people who use the system, that the people who use automobiles should be part of it, and the business community, which benefits so fundamentally from a working mass transit system, should kick in as well. That's the model that the legislature adopted. Money from the users in a fare increase, money from the automobile-using public, not as Dick wanted in tolls, but in other methods, and then the business community kicking in.
Are you saying that the school districts are going to be exempt from the payroll tax? Is that the deal?
There's a repayment schedule. They're going to pay pay it, and they're going to get it back in the same year. But school districts, including New York City, will not pay the payroll tax.
Is that a favor to the teachers' union?
No. You know, Brian, I've done the show for years. Let's not get too cynical too early. This was done because school districts are very tax sensitive, especially in the outer counties, that if you increase costs to schools, you bounce that back to the property tax pretty quickly. That was not an intention. We fixed that. We didn't want to leave New York City out, so we fixed it for New York City as well. This was purely about tax policy. But the point is that for years, we've been seeing this crisis looming. The MTA's only institutional remedy until Ravitch was to raise fares. That was a policy fight that we were having that Lee's day-to-day successes did not affect. Mm-hmm. And that is why I think we changed the fundamental governance of the MTA and why in which, if Governor Patterson made a move to remove him, which may be the reason.
Pete Donahue from the Daily News, a last word. What happens now? I gather it's going to be Lee Hemmerdinger, who is also high in the management structure as the likely new head of the MTA. What's his challenge?
Well, I don't know who's going to be the new head. I don't think it's going to be dramatically different. I think you'll probably still see some wealthy political contributor having at least some sort of title out there. That's my guess.
Or Dale.
The challenge out there, I guess, from the governor's office is to change the public image of the MTA, and I think that's what they see as he's going to try to ride for the next year and a half.
Richard Brodsky, Democratic Assemblyman from Westchester. Pete Donahue, transit reporter for the Daily News. Thanks a lot for talking
to
us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. New law making it through the legislature in Westchester would allow New Jersey would allow underage drinkers to report if they're in medical trouble without fearing arrest. We'll also ask, should this apply to other kinds of substances? Stay tuned.